episode 62. We're back, and we're back with our friend Kyler.
Yo.
How's it going, Kyler?
It's good. It's good. Another Friday.
Another Friday. Friday when we're recording it. When does this come out? I have no idea.
That's right.
You know? Some people think this is live, but it's not live. We record before it comes out. So.
And we edit.
And we do edit. Yeah.
Occasionally. Yeah. I mean, we don't cut out too much stuff.
Thank goodness. Yeah. Thank goodness. Just all the inappropriate jokes.
Oh. Yeah, mostly Rob.
He won't listen to this, so we can...
That's true. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so two designers in the house figured it might be fun for us on a Friday afternoon to chat about graphic design pet peeves. For any designers out there listening, you can send us comments or shake your fist in the air or whatever, but things that might not necessarily be a rule, but just things that bother us, you know what I mean? Or... things that you were classically trained, I was classically trained, you know what I mean?
It's
things,
true.
Things that we see out in the world that, ooh, God, that drives me crazy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because there is a world of I don't want to say non-designers designing, but there's a world of
There's a world of non-designers designing.
Armchair designers.
Yeah, exactly.
However you want to put it.
Yeah, know. Yeah. And it's only going to happen more with Adobe kind of reaching out more towards... hey, you don't have to be a designer to use design stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, ugh, which is so weird that they would, from a business perspective, sort of, I don't want to say alienate their core target audience because we're trapped with them. We're not going anywhere. You know?
They have like Firefly
is what I'm thinking. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I was thinking of that, but in general, they've made the user interface. They've tried to move towards easier and easier to use
Or
people who are less familiar with programs.
Yeah.
Or they have like the light versions of different things.
Yeah, Apple's kind of doing the same thing. Like our computers are slowly turning into our phones.
True.
You know what I mean? In terms of like the system preferences and the back end and all. I mean, we've been power users for, 20 years now, right? And it's like, no, I don't need my computer to look like my phone.
Right.
You know, but now
I don't want it to.
Yeah, but now it's starting to happen.
That's true.
Which is interesting. So, but anyway, back to graphic design pet peeves. I just did a couple quick notes on things right off the top that get my goat. Number one on the list is always going to be stretching and destroying the logo.
Yeah, we've talked about that. I mean, I didn't even write that down because
it's so obvious.
Beyond a pet peeve.
Exactly, we have to get that. But like, oh my God, I gave the client the logo and then they sent me a PowerPoint of direction or this or that. They stretched their own logo.
Right.
Like, God, what are you guys doing? Hold down shift.
I would go one further. It's not type two. Stretching any kind of type. Stretching anything that's designed the way it was supposed to be.
Dear God, people, just hold the shift button. Right? And shift it, and stretch and resize accordingly.
In Photoshop, you don't have to hold shift.
I know.
Right?
I know. They made it dummy proof.
I was going to say, that was one of the changes they did that long ago.
I know. I had to, I spent, I spent 2 minutes trying to figure out how to undo that because, daddy need to move things around the way I want to move it.
It's interesting to me they didn't do that with Illustrator.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's a whole nother topic.
That's true.
Like, why don't Illustrator and Photoshop play nicer together or have some similarities? It blows my mind.
I could rant. We could do another one on pet peeve application.
Oh, my Lord. For sure. So stretching logos right off the top. That's number one. Number two for me is, not that this is in any particular order, of course, and I think I may have mentioned it before on something, is type that's running vertical. So vertical typography. And, I was always taught, and if you look at any bookshelf on Earth, you tilt your head to the right. And it reads from the top down. That's the way type is supposed to be, on a vertical book spine, right? Mm-hmm. So it drives me crazy when I'm out and about or wayfinding, or you see signage at a mall or in a strip mall or outside the building or whatever, and it's Office Depot and the O is at the bottom of the sign.
Right.
And you read from bottom up. It's like, what in the hell are these people doing? Like, that is is that a rule? I don't know. I don't know if that's actually technically a hard and fast rule. I feel like it is.
I remember a professor mentioning that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't have type going from the floor to the sky. Like, it's
no, it
top
doesn't
down.
Make any sense.
Top down, people. Like, why are we doing
this? The interesting
thing
is, I bet that would probably be the same, because, in Eastern cultures, they read
right to left.
Right to left.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that they would also, though, do top down. Because bottom up just doesn't make sense.
Bottom up
from any standpoint.
Almost universal. I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and there is a rare occasion where it actually made sense.
It only makes sense when there's two. One's going top down, one's going bottom up.
Like end caps on a trade show or something like that?
I guess. I'm trying to think of, in a design where you were having you know, the type going both ways.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It might play. But
yeah, I don't know that there's really ever an appropriate time to go bottom up. But I'm telling you, it happens all the time when you see it out and about, and it gives me the heebs. But I don't heebie-jeebies is what I mean by that. Yeah. But I don't know that anybody really thinks about it like how we think about it. So
I don't know. I think I remember hearing Paula Scherer talking about when she did posters for MoMA.
Okay.
If you think about the MoMA posters or even the banners that come off the side of the building, it's MoMA, you know, top down. Right.
Yeah.
And then you have all the exhibit information to the left of the top down type. And she set up a bunch of different templates for them because they were doing it the other way.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Do you want me to keep going? Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, you
here?
Keep going. Okay. Mine are a little bit more nitpicky.
All right, here's one that I think you will appreciate, considering the work that we've done this week and what's gone into it. And you see it all over the place. I'm going to say transparency in bottles. And here's what I mean by that. There's always, you know, it's a Coca-Cola bottle or it's a Pepsi bottle or whatever. It's a beer bottle. It's whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a glass bottle, right?
Right.
And some artist out there, production artist or us or whomever, right? It's up. I got a bunch of visual assets from a client and, I have to create an ad. I have to do something with it, right?
Right.
And it's, I've got this great Coca-Cola bottle and I've put it on a background. But from the bottle cap down to where the Coke starts, you know, is white because it was shot in a studio.
It was shot in a
white
studio.
And, yeah, it's transparent. Right. Da, da, da. Yet you've put it on a red background, you know, and yet you don't spend the 10 minutes to knock out that white and actually do a transparency through to what the actual background is.
There's a lot of ways to do that, too.
Yeah.
But
that makes me cuckoo pants.
Yeah.
You know,
you'll see it, too, with people who have pulled
all over the
stock stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So much stock stuff is on a white background, and you get a similar kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's, here's this great, beautiful beach shot or whatever, and somebody's holding a bottle or whatever like that. And it's like, it's got the white neck. That makes me crazy. Did no one along the approval process see what's happening here? You know? Now, I mean, if we're doing low res comps for, you know, like don't spend it, only do it when it's final.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, to get that through. But that's another weird little pet peeve of the way that the industry has sort of grown is that, you know, you see that. You see that it's obviously a fake image, right? That to me is an immediate tip off. Okay, this is a composite of some sort. You know?
And we were talking actually also about the lighting of different assets.
Oh, yeah.
Being compiled together. It's one of those things where to an untrained eye, you're still aware that something's wrong.
Yeah.
Because you see the real and the natural world all the time.
Correct.
Even if you can't articulate, what's happening here? Something looks funny. It doesn't look real.
Totally.
You know, a lot of times it has to do with lighting. In the case of transparency, that's a little bit more obvious, but...
Yeah. But is it, though? I mean, there's a gas station down here on the corner that's fully wrapped in Coca-Cola stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I don't even know. Like the whole side of the building, of the little... The mart or whatever like that. It's all Coca-Cola. It's the skyline. It's got bottles. And even that, I mean, that thing's... The bottle's like 9 feet tall, you know?
And they didn't knock out
the neck of the thing. It blows my mind.
Yeah, well, that's the total lack of attention to detail. I don't know how that... The problem is that probably got past like a dozen eyes who looked at that and everyone gave it the thumbs up.
Yeah, no one ever saw it. Yeah, exactly. It's weird. Again, that's a very, very... I mean, we're talking pet peeves, so it's just my own weird little idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, no, I get it. The ones that I wrote down were alignment is my number one pet peeve.
Alignment.
I know one of the other designers who used to work here had a similar...
pet peeve.
Frustration about alignment. And I think she mentioned when she would go through resumes that those were the first ones that she was throwing out. You know, it's like, and I got to be honest, that's probably a good indicator.
I mean, it's a great, if you cannot typeset your CV appropriately, you know, you're in trouble right from the get-go.
Yeah. So it's, for me, it would be alignment. And then one thing that really bothers me.
Well, hold on. Just for the people at home that might not know what that means, alignment, you're speaking specifically to typography. Is that correct?
Yes and no. So also meaning if there are certain objects that are coming to a hard edge, say to the left, and then you have left aligned type underneath it, but it's not at that same line, that'll bother me as well.
Oh, for sure.
So it's kind of like just paying attention to the verticals and the horizontals and where things are hitting and trying to keep everything consistent. And I know, you know, most trained designers are putting guides on many of their designs, or if you're working in InDesign, it, you know, sometimes it's kind of set up for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Depending on how you set it up. And some programs will, you know, do a hard snap to those areas, right?
Yeah.
But other times you kind of need to be a little bit more...
You got to keep the eye out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, critical eye, you know, and tangents too, mm-hmm. to make sure that things aren't right. terminating in strange places.
Right, exactly. You know, so alignment, and then the one another one that gets me is spacing. So if you have a logo and a line of type and then a subhead type, right?
Okay.
Underneath it. To me, there should be some kind of proportionality between the spacing of those things, whether it's the same distance between each of those objects,
yeah.
or if one needs a little bit more space, is it a the same distance plus a half of that, mm-hmm. or is it twice of that?
Yeah.
Sometimes I will see things where I feel like it's so arbitrary
yeah.
that it just feels like it wasn't quite as careful as it should have been.
I can't
just
tell.
To the little stuff.
I can't tell you how excited I am to hear you say this, because that is it is definitely one of my pet peeves, the arbitrary nature of spacing between mm-hmm. elements. And, you know, we talk about layout, proportion, form, you know, but there is a specificity and a purpose to mm-hmm. visual hierarchy, right? And right. I know I'm right. saying, it sounds like I'm saying a word salad right now. But
no, but that is like the word that comes up 1,000 times in design school, right?
Yeah.
Hierarchy.
Yeah, but whatever you're doing, you know, there has to be a visual flow and a priority mm-hmm. or a prioritization of information, right? And one of the easiest ways that young designers, or one of the easiest ways you can achieve that, right, is by having proper alignment and spacing between mm-hmm. all the elements. To your point, if it's arbitrary, right, your eye gets into a confused zigzag motion,
exactly.
or you're not really sure what's happening.
Right.
And there is no, if things are too tight in certain areas, but then right. open in other areas, you know, I'm sure people listening have heard about negative space, white space, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing, right? You need the visual break for your eyeball, for your brain to process what you're actually, you know, interfacing with, right? So if everything's so cramped and tight and whatnot, you know, you're not going to have
see it as one thing.
Yeah, you know, and you're not going to have a successful priority, you know, or hierarchy, mm-hmm. right, of what's happening. So, yeah, that is...
On the flip side of that, if there's too much spacing for something that should be read as part,
yeah.
you know, multiple parts of a whole,
yeah.
then it feels like it's just kind of hanging off.
For sure.
And is this part of the logo, or,
yeah.
or is this, you know... There's all kinds of things like that. And I would say this is another one of those things that to non-designers, they might find it looks funny
yeah.
and not understand or be able to yeah. articulate why.
Yeah.
But I feel like to most people, we see enough good design.
Yes.
This is one of those things
God,
where
fingers
you
crossed.
kind of only realize it when it's bad design.
Yeah.
Good design tends to be the more thankless, I don't want to call it a thankless job because it's... There's more thankless jobs out there than a graphic designer. but it's one of those things where, like, if
hey, man, we've got it pretty good.
That's right.
We've got it pretty good.
If design is done right, a lot of times it's something that just feels natural.
Yes.
Like you've seen it before almost, or
yeah.
even if it's, you know, something totally fresh. If you're noticing it, a lot of times I would say it's because there's something wonky about it.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So
but just because it's fresh and clean doesn't mean it's easy to achieve that.
Right.
I mean, yeah. It's kind of like, think about like illustrators who thumbnail and scribble scrabble out like so many forms and proportions. Like, you know what I mean? The final product may be this super clean monoline drawing or illustration or whatever, but the work and the scratch mm-hmm. work to get to that point, you know what I mean, is where the labor is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was having a conversation with another person in the office yesterday about kind of the difference between graphic design and art direction, right? And we're mm-hmm. working on some advertising elements, right? And it was, hey, while the design is great, you know, if you look at it independently from a graphic design perspective, good things are happening, mm-hmm. right? But to your point, Kyler, like from an art directional perspective and wanting to group and cluster, you know, bits of information together to simplify the approach for a user, right? Mm-hmm. Advertising, it's like, hey, I want a 1, 2, 3 and I'm out.
Right.
You know,
right.
I want to see what the headline is. What are you telling me?
Right.
What are you showing me?
Mm-hmm.
And then who is it brought to you by?
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm grossly oversimplifying
sure,
things
but it's
painting
usually,
with a broad brush.
Usually you just can't have, if there's three elements or three points you're getting across, they can't have
equal weight
in
correct.
Terms of and the importance, right?
100% correct.
And we see that all the time. You see it, whether you're just opening up a magazine, just about every ad you're going to see, you're going to see a big headline and
yeah.
then you're going to see some smaller information, whatever that information is, and
yeah.
then you might see body copy, or you might see, you know,
yeah.
buy
or
whoever
yeah.
it is. But if it's all the same thing,
yeah, if it all has the same visual weight,
right? then you might read the you know, brought to you by as the headline.
Yeah, exactly.
When that's, you know, obviously.
Well, it is one of the interesting aspects of the sort of the difference between art direction and graphic design.
Right.
But we are talking about design pet peeves, you know.
True.
And I think all of this ties into spacing and the, what you were talking about, you know.
Spacing, alignment, and I mean, those are elements that help hierarchy, you know, happen.
Totally.
You know, so.
Totally. All right, what else is on your list? Or because I got another one here.
You go ahead.
All right, I'm going to say, because you had mentioned, you know, a lot of non-trained designers doing design work, whatever. I'm going to say the magical drop shadow button.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Super pet peeve of mine. Like, you know, just the, you know, we are in an Instagram filter world and all this crazy stuff, right? But from a design perspective, we've got all these great little one-touch solutions that kind of kickstart the process, right? And I say kickstart the process of, yay, I can hit the drop shadow button, and then poof, there's a drop shadow, right?
And the opacity is way too high.
However, that does not mean that we are done here with the drop shadow. That doesn't mean that you have, to your point about the bottles, that there's a consistent lighting source, that it is the correct color. Not all drop shadows are black, you know, like...
Right. That's true.
You know, so, you know, when I see designs out in the world, especially drop shadows on type, completely unnecessary, some type of handwritten cursive type with a drop shadow on it on a website, it's like, oh my Lord, like hit the back button. I'm getting out of here. Yeah. Like, this is awful. So
I know you'll agree with me. The best use of a drop shadow for type is when you,
what's about to happen here?
I was going to say you kill the X and the Y, right? And then you just blow out the blur.
Yes.
Way high.
Yes.
So that basically
you're adding contrast.
That you almost can't see is kind of how I've used it. I would say I use the drop shadow like that more than I do any other way, but it works for things that are totally flat.
Yeah.
You're looking at it directly flat on it.
Yeah.
If you're doing a shadow on an object that's sitting up with an angular light source,
God,
there is no drop. Like, you can't use it. You got to go build a shadow. You got to make a mesh or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I was working on an ad today and we had a headline over some clouds, right? And it was, hey, I'll use the drop shadow as a method to diffuse the white type away from the white clouds, right? And then I'll set my drop shadow to be a blue, you know, I'll color pick it or whatever from the photo itself. And you don't even know it's there,
right?
But it helps add a little bit of contrast, right? Versus, oh, if I've got a cup of coffee here that I need to, you know, retouch into an image, right? Yeah. You have to custom build that shadow, you know, like an illustrator, like a retoucher, you know, like there's no magical drop shadow to like add to this, like it's totally insane.
You got to use ellipses and, gradients and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, the gradient. Well, besides the type, the other thing that just makes me.
Oh, gradients. Yeah, we could talk about gradients.
Oh, God. Well, let me finish this thought, though, is when you go to, I'm browsing for something online. I go to a site and they've got, you know, thumbnails of all their products or whatever.
Right.
And they've clipped all their products and then use the exact same drop shadow on every single product. Like, it's like, oh, God. Why did you do this?
Usually irks me about that is
dude, we're down the nerd graphic design cave.
It's sometimes not even necessarily the drop shadow. It's how pronounced it is.
Oh, so dark.
You know, like if you're new to design, try 15%. It works pretty well.
Well said. So, those are some of my pet peeves. Any other initial pet peeves off the top of your head?
You mentioned gradients.
Yeah.
That is one of my big pet peeves. Okay. And I'm going to mention it because right now I feel like there's a trend.
Okay.
Maybe in the app world.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
To slap a gradient on something.
On everything.
Yeah. I mean, whether it's HBO Max, Instagram, that was their big rebrand on Instagram was the gradient.
I think when Instagram changed to the rainbowish kind of gradient.
Magenta, yellow.
Whatever. Yeah, there's a purple and all the different things. And I do think they did a successful job with their mark, right? I will say that they did a great job on that, right? But what it did is it kickstarted off every other company wanting to try to do gradient scenarios in everything. Not only just their mark, but in all their background. Like
everything.
Just, oh, my word.
And much like the drop shadow, it can be used if it's subtle. You know, so you're going from one shade of blue to a shade of blue just underneath that.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you get like this nice little tonal difference versus I'm going from one side of the color wheel to the other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
I think why it's successful is it's really more of a gradient mesh than it is just a straight drag of a gradient, right?
So is HBO Max.
Yeah, HBO Max, I think, you know, soon to not be HBO Max anymore. Right. But
that's true.
Which is a whole other conversation about why would you drop the power of HBO? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. But the gradient mesh, I think, is definitely a, when done right, it's good. It adds a subtle sort of, more of a blend.
It feels more organic
than
your straight linear or radial.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, again, because we are both trained in digital as well as print and have to deal with that all the time, right? We also have that interesting viewpoint on, well, you know, RGB, and we've talked about color sources, you know, an RGB gradient mesh, you know, can be a powerful tool versus, oh, whoa, you can't print that.
No.
Like that is not going to print even remotely close to what, you know what I mean? So I think we both have an aversion to gradients in that respect too, but subtle, just like drop shadows, like you're saying, maybe less is more, you know, and those types of things. So
in general, I would say in design, it tends to be, subtlety is kind of the name of the game.
For sure.
And subtlety helps when you do want to make a big statement with something within the design.
Yes.
It helps that stand out and be the, the focus.
So. Yeah, the priority. Mm-hmm. So, all right. I mean, I'm good. I mean, this could be a multi-part series, but I think these are kind of, these are kind of the highlights, you know, so.
Yeah.
I think that'll wrap it up for today. Where can the people find us, Mr. C?
MockTheAgency.com.
There you go.
And on the socials at MockTheAgency.
All right. Well said. All right. We'll kick it out till next time. Thanks, everybody.